I'm Emma and I'll be reading the Bible for us tonight. The passage comes from the book of Romans, chapter 10, verses 9 to 13. If you declare with your mouth, Jesus is Lord, and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved. For it is with your heart that you believe and are justified, and it is with your mouth that you profess your faith and are saved. As Scripture says, anyone who believes in him will never be put to shame. For there is no difference between Jew and Gentile. The same Lord is Lord of all and richly blesses all who call on him. For everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved.
Everyone's been super excited about today, walking around the office, hanging out with the other staff members. Everyone's just so happy. And I can feel the energy from everyone here tonight. It's just such a great demonstration of support and celebration. I couldn't be happier to be here and to stand before you today. And I really just want to go back to the basics of why we're celebrating and speak to that for a minute tonight. In particular, I just want to ask you a really straightforward question. What is a Christian? Or maybe a little bit more personal, are you a Christian? And because we're in a church, a lot of you who come here, you're probably going to answer, yeah, I'm a Christian. That's great. That's something to celebrate. But also we're a church that gets a little upset if everyone who walks through our doors is Christian, because it means that we're a little detached or disconnected from the Australian kind of community. And we want to be a church that's kind of relevant and open to everyone. So if you've come here as a guest tonight and you don't call yourself Christian, then we celebrate that you're here and it's so nice that you've joined us. What is a Christian? There was a young guy, he was hanging around the edges of the church for a while, and I thought this guy seemed pretty interested in Christianity. He didn't grow up in church, his parents weren't Christian, so they didn't take him to church. But he was around for 6 months, and he started coming early and leaving late, and he was joining all these groups to look into Jesus, and I just wondered if he'd become a Christian. So I walked up and asked him a pretty direct question. I said, have you started calling yourself a Christian? And he didn't know how to answer because he was unsure if he could call himself a Christian. So I asked him, well, what is a Christian? And you could just hear that his definition of a Christian was unattainable. It was like no one in the church could live up to it. He had this definition of what a Christian is that stopped him from being able to call himself a Christian, and he was making it way too complicated. So we went out to the, you know, to St. Ives Village, and we turned a 5 minutes into an hour, and we had a good chat. While we were there, we looked at this reading from tonight, and I'll pull out this one verse in particular. If you declare with your mouth, Jesus is Lord, and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved. And if I could just sum up a one-hour conversation about this, just really quick snapshot. I basically said to him, okay, so do you acknowledge that Jesus is Lord? He said, yes. I said, okay, do you believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead? And he said, yes. And I said, so are you saved? And he just started smiling. And then I you know, said, so are you a Christian? And his smile got even bigger. And so we prayed, and that was the day that he started calling himself a Christian. He was so happy. He gave me a big hug when he said goodbye. And he just was so happy. Why was he happy? Why was he happy to become a Christian? It's in this passage at the end. It says, if you declare with your mouth Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart God raised him from the dead, you will be saved. What does it mean, saved? And why is that so good? Well, saved is so many things. There's so many things we're saved from. There's so many things we're saved to. And if you want to spend the rest of your life thinking about how Jesus saves, then there's so much to explore. But if I could just, you know, kind of tie it in with where we're headed tonight with baptism and then draw on one or two words from the passage, I'd just say, just think about people getting in a water tank, you know, when someone gets wet, it kind of is like washing, right? That's the first thing. The first thing that happens is that we're acknowledging that the Lord is cleaning away the past and bringing a clean slate. I couldn't decide which photo to give. You can see the joy on the friends and family, can't you? But let's go to the next slide too, and you can just see everyone's just loving it. Okay, so you get in the tank, and you get this washing experience, which symbolically represents that God wipes away the things that you're ashamed of. He washes you clean. He gives you a clean slate. The other thing is, you go underwater and come up again, just like Jesus went under the grave, into the tomb, and came out and rose to life again. And the idea there is actually, this is from Romans 6, that the person being baptized dies to who they were, and then there's new life in Jesus. You come out fresh and woo, and you come out of the water, and you look at all the people around that are clapping and smiling, and this is the other part. It talks in 1 Corinthians about being baptized into the body. And so you come out of the water and you see everyone welcoming you. The body of Christ welcomes you. But it's not just a welcome from the people in the church. It's actually more significant than that. God welcomes you. And the water is ordinary water. It's just a symbol. But it's a symbol of the extraordinary thing that God does when you put your faith in Jesus by the work of the Holy Spirit. He washes you. He transforms you. He welcomes you into his family. And that's a picture of salvation. So there you go, one image of salvation baptism. Let's look at a couple of words in the passage. Salvation is more things that we can draw out here. So verse 11. Anyone who believes in him will never be put to shame. What is shame? What does it mean to never be put to shame? Okay, shame, you've got examples all around you. You know, when you're looking at your news feed and someone in like a footy team or something gets kind of publicly shamed in the news because they've made a mistake in their moral life and the whole world hears about it. That's kind of an example of what shame looks like. Another example is in your family or in your friendship groups, someone is found out to have done something really like against the group community, and they do it in private, but it gets exposed and everyone's like upset with them, and they're subject to that experience of shame. Or it might be, you know, you have a night out with friends and the next day when you wake up you feel embarrassed and regretful for what happened last night. That's the kind of experience of shame. And what we're reading here is that people who believe in him will never be put to shame. This is saying Jesus came to save you from that kind of shame. He came as baptism to wash away that shame. You have a clean conscience, and in the community where Jesus is in charge, your regrets, your embarrassments, and your mistakes, they're washed away. It's a clean slate. When we think of a clean slate, we usually think of our past being washed away, but this is more than that. It's a clean slate every day, because it says there, you will never be put to shame. It's from the past, it's for now, it's even in the future as you make mistakes. Because the work of Jesus, you will never be put to shame. You'll still feel shame some days, of course, when you behave in ways that make you feel ashamed. But the deeper point is that in God's eyes, when he looks at you, he's not embarrassed about you. He's not looking at you with shame. He's looking at you tenderly with his eyes of love and acceptance. He sees you with no shame. And the hope of every Christian is that even though we make mistakes and there's things we get embarrassed and ashamed of, there is this hope of the future where one day everyone will see us in a community in the same way God sees us, that by the time we get to heaven, we'll be transformed so there's nothing to be ashamed about, and it will be a community that experiences no shame. This is what it means to never be put to shame. So that's another aspect of salvation. And if I could just go one more word in the passage for salvation, it's the word justified. It's in verse 10. For it is with your heart that you believe and are justified, and it is with your mouth that you profess faith and are saved. What does it mean to be justified? We can give some examples again. You know, when someone goes to court to be put on trial to decide whether they've done the right thing, and the jury decides that they're not guilty, and the person gets let off from all of the consequences, they're declared innocent. That's what it means to be justified. Another example, someone crashes into your car, and the insurance company says to you, hey, don't worry about it. It wasn't your fault, it was their fault. We'll sort it out. It won't cost you a thing. you're justified. Or it might be that someone's upset with you, a friend's upset with you, you know, you've been in a bit of a conflict, but they totally misread the situation and they assumed you'd done something you hadn't done, then they realise you've done nothing wrong and they come and they say, I'm really sorry, I misjudged the whole situation. That's justified. You're innocent and there is no consequences for the things that you've done. And this is what we're hearing here is that when the Lord saves you, he justifies you so that you are declared innocent and there are no bad consequences. So the Christian has nothing to fear. You don't have to worry about meeting God as if there's going to be judgment upon you or hell or some sort of consequence. Actually, greatly, he has justified you so you're free and you can walk into the presence of God without fear and without the fear of negative consequences. So there's a few different angles on what the word saved means. And there's so much more we could say about salvation, and you can go explore it for the rest of your life. But for today, I just wanted the two words in the passage, plus the symbolism of baptism, draw it together and give a picture of salvation. And that is why that young guy who became a Christian that day had a smile on his face. And if, you know, we're smiling and clapping, it's because as a community, we're overjoyed at the prospect of salvation for all who believe. Now, the beauty here is that it's for everyone. Everyone, it says in verse 13, who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. Not might be saved, will be saved. This is a promise, absolute certainty from God's perspective, nothing to fear. Everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. And it's not just those people that got on stage earlier. Anyone in the room who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. And it's therefore not hard or unattainable. It's not some sort of moral test. You don't have to live up to some perfect or hard standard. You don't have to become something that is of worth and worthiness that God would say, hey, you've lived up to it now, you're welcome. Actually, it's all who call on the name of the Lord will be saved. It is that easy. But it has to come from a sincere heart. And I just wanted to add this, you know, qualifier or clarifier, that calling on the name of the Lord comes from the heart and the mouth, and you can see that language in the passage. So did you pick it up in this next verse that we'll go back to? If you declare with your mouth Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved. So this is something that has to come from within, from the heart. And when it says like the heart, that's where you think from, that's where you feel from. It's actually who you are at your core. It represents your soul crying out. And this is sincere to you if you say with your heart, God raised Jesus from the dead. And if your heart's there, well, there's a connection between your heart and your mouth. We know this in generally in life. So if you score a goal at the sport, you tell everyone, hey, I scored a goal. And if you catch a great wave at the beach, you tell everyone about the great wave you caught. If someone has a kid, they're excited, they tell everyone because their heart overflows into their speech. You get a great new job, you tell your friends you got this great new job because you're excited and the heart and the mouth are connected. And here it's saying that anyone who believes with their heart that Jesus rose from the dead, it will connect with their mouth in a profession that Jesus is Lord. Because those are two connected things in the Bible. People don't usually rise from the dead. You've never seen someone rise from the dead. But the biblical expectation, anticipation is that the one who rises from the dead is raised to become the Lord of all. That's the expectation. So if you believe it with your heart, your mouth will say, Jesus is Lord. Jesus is Lord, though? I mean, what language is that? We don't use that word much in our normal conversations. What does it mean that someone's a Lord? Because, you know, even in the governments around here, we don't tend to speak of lords. There's a little bit of a relic of lordship stuff going on in other countries. But around here, we don't tend to use the phrase Lord. What does it mean, Lord? Well, in Australia, the place that we tend to talk about lords is when it's a religious context. You talk about God being Lord, and that's not without reason, because the whole Bible is speaking of God as Lord. And if I could just pull this up, this next slide up, it says here, can I get the next slide? God, the blessed and only ruler, the King of kings and Lord of lords. This is the way the Bible speaks of God. He's not the only Lord, but he's the Lord of lords. So in that sense, he's the only ruler. He stands above all the rulers of the world. God's in charge, the maker, the sustainer, the judge. He is Lord of lords. The same thing said about Jesus in the Bible. So this phrase is applied to Jesus. He is Lord of lords and King of kings. And so this idea here is like, for a Christian, you've got all kinds of people in charge in life. And lordship is just someone who's in charge, really. But there's all kinds of people who are in charge. This is saying that Jesus stands above them all. And so if you've got family or friends, you've got a government, you've got a society that tells you to do A and Jesus tells you to do B, if Jesus is Lord of all, you do what Jesus says, which can create challenges. If the government says don't do something and Jesus says do something, Christians follow Jesus and then risk the consequences with the government. That's what it means that Jesus is Lord. And you can see that in the early church, because they didn't just follow Jesus as a guide, but as their God. They didn't follow Jesus just as a moral teacher. They followed him as their Lord. And that's what a Christian does. There's a big difference between following someone as a guide and following someone as your Lord. Here's an illustration. I got this picture of a driver's seat. So I get the next slide. You can be at the wheel of your car. And the difference between Jesus is guide and Jesus is Lord is the difference between who's actually at the steering wheel. You can be sitting in the driver's seat and Jesus can be in the passenger seat. He can give you guidance for life like a GPS. He can give you directions. That's Jesus' guide. But a Christian gets out of the driver's seat, lets Jesus in the driver's seat. He sets the direction for life. And the Christian says, where do you want me to go, Lord? I will go where you have me go. That's the difference between Jesus as Lord and Jesus as guide. Now, this is a big life change, so it's not for everyone. And you've got to count the cost. If you want to become a Christian, you've got to know what you're getting into. You've got to count the cost, because you're actually saying Jesus is in charge of my life. A lot of people would prefer alternatives. And so let me just comment on a few alternatives and then come back to Jesus. Some people prefer that there are no lords, no one's in charge. There's no God in charge, there's no lords over me. I want to be free. If you could take it to the extreme, you just run away, get out of the city, go off grid, go somewhere else where there is less oppressive governments over you. But the trouble is, wherever you live in the world, you're always in a country, you're always in a society, there's always some legislations, there's always things above you. And even if you can escape and get your own little shack with your family or something like that, you'll end up having dynamics of leadership in the family. And this is the way society works. If you've ever read Lord of the Flies, I had to do that for my high school years. Lord of the Flies, kids left on an island with no adults around. Someone steps up, takes the good lead, then someone else challenges that lead, and it's all this journey of what it's like to not have a lord. Is that people become their own lords. It's an interesting dynamic. You can never really get away from lords. If there truly is a lord, you can run, but you won't be able to get away. Another option is to make yourself the lord. And I reckon a lot of people are trying to do this, you know, become in charge or the leader. Be the best in an area, could be in sport. I want to get to the top, I want to be the best. Challenge there is out of the 1,000 people that want to become elite, only one of them becomes elite, and so 999 are left wondering what happened. The trouble there is that when it comes to the leadership of a country like Australia, there's 26 million people in Australia, so no matter how high you get, there's probably always going to be someone above you. This challenge of making yourself Lord is actually competitive, and it can be quite exhausting because you're always fighting with people to try and get the better position and get to the top. Making yourself Lord actually leads to a whole lot of stress, and you can't actually be in control as much as you'd like to be, because not only can your health get in the way, but one day someone will knock you off your perch, or you'll retire, whatever it is. It's hard to be a lord. So another option is to follow other lords. You can find people that you look up to and vote for them. And, you know, obviously every country has an election, so you vote for someone to become your lord. But the challenge is, like, the people you vote for often don't win. And if they do, they might stay in for a term and then they're no longer in. And if you look around the world, any point in any time, there's always some pretty interesting people in leadership. What does it look like to have an alternative lord, to you be lord, to run away from lords? They're all things that people try. But for me, I'll go to Jesus as Lord. Because Jesus is a good Lord. He's the Lord that I love to follow. I'll surrender my life to him. And I'd say that the people who are getting on stage today, they've counted the cost. And they've decided that Jesus is the best Lord and that he's the one worth following. What is a Christian? I'm going to finish with this. According to Romans 10, you're a Christian if you declare with your mouth, Jesus is Lord, and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead. That's what a whole lot of people are doing today, declaring Jesus is Lord. Why is that so good? It's because everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. And so this is why it's a celebration. Because the people that are getting baptized and getting on stage today, they're calling on the name of the Lord, and we can be sure that they will never be put to shame. They are washed, they are clean, they are justified, they are without shame and guilt, and they rise up into the presence of God and the community of God's people with a big smile on their face, and we give them a big clap. How good is that? So I'm going to invite the band to come up, and I'll just finish on this. Today is a celebration, but it's also an invitation. For you, do you want to have a life before God without shame, a clean slate, justified? Then come. Call on the name of the Lord and you will be saved.